U.S. President-elect Donald Trump appoints outspoken China critic Peter Navarro as head of the new White House National Trade Council and director of trade and industrial policy. The academic was an advisor to Mr. Trump during the election campaign.
This recall of 29 million IKEA chests and drawers is one of the most comprehensive consumer safety recalls in American history. It is simply too dangerous to have the recalled furniture in your home unanchored, especially if you have young children.
More Americans are making the jump to home ownership. Sales of existing houses rose 15% last year over 2015, the fastest pace in nearly a decade. But prices are also going up, and that has some wondering if the real estate market is heading for a bubble. The average price for a home, almost $235,000.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. It's 5:08, and today is Thursday, December 22nd. It's Dave Plyer in for Steve Grzanich here on The Opening Bell on 720 WGN. A couple of things we'll be looking at this morning. Mike Hawkins, Chief Financial Officer for the Medical Cannabis Innovations Group, will be joining us after the news at 5:30. And coming up, Steve Grzanich talks to our thought leader of the morning. It's Doug Myers, Senior VP of Associated Bank. All that is coming up after we check the WGN Associated Bank market desk this morning. Dow futures pointing down, the S&P and NASDAQ as well. In Europe, all the indices are down. In Asia, the Shanghai Composites are up a point. Both the Nikkei and the FTSE are also down a point. Oil futures edged lower following a report showing a surprise build in U.S. crude inventories last week, and U.S. crude stocks rose by 2.3 million barrels as refineries hiked output, while gasoline stocks and inventories fell. Analysts were expecting U.S. crude inventories to fall by 2.5 million barrels. We also have some business news happening around the world yesterday and overnight. In yesterday's existing home sales report, sales of previously owned homes rose modestly in November as lean inventory and high prices continue to choke the housing market. Existing home sales ran at a seasonally adjusted annual 5.6 million pace, the National Association of Retailers said Thursday. That was up 0.7 from a downwardly revised pace of 5.57 million in October, and marks the highest since February of 2007. The big obstacle is the ongoing housing shortage. There were 4 months of supply at the current pace of sales, the 18th month in which inventory was tighter compared to a level a year ago. The median house price is $234,900, up 6.8% compared to November of 2015. U.S. equities fell slightly on Wednesday with real estate lagging as the Dow Jones Industrial Average failed again to reach the 20,000 mark. The Dow closed about 30 points lower with Goldman Sachs contributing the most losses, leaving the index about 60 points below 20,000. Federal officials on Wednesday touted a record 6.4 million customer signups on the federal Obamacare marketplace, healthcare.gov, so far this open enrollment season, topping last year's pace during the same time by 400,000 customers. They sharply warned that insurance coverage gains under Obamacare could be lost if President-elect Donald Trump and congressional Republicans follow through on their threats to repeal the Affordable Care Act. FedEx and UPS say packages during a record-setting holiday season are shipping without a hitch. FedEx has said that the last 4 Mondays before Christmas are the busiest days in the company's history. Thanks to the continued growth in online shopping, the company will deliver an estimated 30 million packages per day for the remainder of the week, nearly double its normal daily volume. Nintendo Company's first Mario smartphone title has set a download record, but gamers balked at the one-time cost of unlocking content, prompting investors to push the Japanese game maker's stock to a one-month low. Super Mario Run hit 25 million downloads just 4 days after its release in 151 countries on the Apple App Store, earning gross sales on about 121 million. Citadel founder and CEO Ken Griffin, the richest man in Illinois, is giving $12 million to the Chicago Park District to help fund separate paths for cyclists and pedestrians along the city's 18-mile lakefront. Griffin and Mayor Rahm Emanuel announced the donation yesterday morning at an event at the Arts and Recreation Center in Ellis Park on the south side. The mayor's office said in a statement the gift will help stretch the mayor's earlier plan for creating the double pass on the north and south sides between Fullerton and Ohio Streets and 31st and 51st Streets along the whole lakefront. The work is already partially done and will be completed by 2018. All right, we are just a couple days before the Christmas weekend is ahead. Are you ready? Have you wrapped all your gifts? 24 hours left. Make sure you take a little time for yourself and get that done before the big weekend begins. Now, it is Thursday. It's time for the Associated Bank Thought Leader. Today's guest is Doug Myers. He is the Senior Vice President and Private Banking Regional Manager, and he sat down with WGN's Steve Grzanich earlier this week.
Doug, welcome back to the Opening Bell. Good to see you.
Thank you, Steve. Good to be here.
Here on a holiday week, you ready for Christmas? Got all your presents bought?
Not quite, but my wife tells me I'm going to be by Friday or Saturday.
Well, good, good. So. Lots of us are looking forward to the holiday, also looking forward to next year as well, 2017. And we thought, well, we had you in today, we'd talk a little bit about some of the trends you see coming in wealth management next year. What would be the couple of the big ones you see?
I see financial planning is becoming the big trend, and that's something we're certainly working toward enhance our financial planning offering and our platform. And I think people want in their relationship with their bank and financial advisor, I think they want advice, they want help. They're not sure how to navigate the murky waters ahead, especially with all the uncertainty coming up with our new president. I think that everybody's a little bit anxious about what's going to happen. And I think that they're looking for advice and they're willing to pay for good advice.
I always hear from people when I talk to them about financial planner, we have them on the show. What is financial planning and how is it different from me running my own 401k at work? Maybe you could answer that.
That's a great question, Steve. I think what we look at is goal-based financial planning. For example, you have a couple children, they're going to college in, let's say, 10 years, for example. Your goal is to have enough money to get them through college and to have enough money in the bank to pay for the college. I think you don't really care about if the market is up 5%, if you're getting 4.5 or 6, your goal is to have enough money to pay for college. And that's what we refer to as goal-based financial planning. And, you know, you have to have enough to retire. You might buy a vacation home. And those are your goals. And so we're going to sit down with you and make sure that you're doing all the right things to meet your goal.
It is Dave Plyer in for Steve Grzanich here on the Opening Bell on 720 WGN. On the WGN Associated Market Desk this morning, we are following some stocks after earnings reports came out yesterday. Shares of Bed Bath & Beyond slid nearly 4% to $43.75 a share in after-hours trading. After the home goods retailer reported an unexpected decline in comparable store sales and third-quarter earnings and revenue that missed analyst estimates. After the market closed, the Union, New Jersey-based company said comparable store sales dropped 1.4% during the most recent period, while analysts surveyed an expected growth of 0.5%. Earnings of 85 cents per share were lower than Wall Street projections of 98 cents per share. Paychex Inc. on Wednesday reported fiscal second quarter net income of $202.1 million on a per share basis. The Rochester, New York based company said it had a profit of 56 cents. The payroll processor and human resources service provider posted revenue of $771 million in the period, which misses forecasts. Paychex shares have increased 17% since the beginning of the year. And is the finish line finished? The company lowered its earnings forecast yesterday and it's reported less than expected sales growth in the latest quarter, hurt by weak demand for apparel and accessories as the retailer tries to focus on core footwear offerings. Memory chip maker Micron Technology forecast current quarter revenue and profit above estimates and posted its first rise in quarterly revenue in nearly 2 years as a stabilizing PC market boosted chip demand and pricing. Company shares were up 7.4% in aftermarket trading on Wednesday. Micron, which gets 60% of its revenue from DRAM chips, said last month it expected slower industry supply growth for the next few quarters while overall demand stayed healthy. It is now 5:20, time for the Wall Street Now with ABC News.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. After a mixed open, stocks finished at their lowest prices of the day. The Dow dipped 32 points Wednesday to close at 19,941. The S&P 500 lost 5.5 points. The NASDAQ composite fell 12.5. IKEA has agreed to pay $50 million to the families of three children who were killed when their IKEA dressers tipped over and crushed them. After the third death, the company announced that it was recalling 29 million of its popular Malm dressers and announced that it was no longer selling them. The National Association of Realtors says sales of existing homes rose 0.7% last month, the fastest pace in nearly a decade. But rising mortgage rates and the shortage of available homes will likely bring a slowdown in home sales next year. After launching autonomous vehicles in San Francisco last week, Uber has pulled those cars off the road. State regulators say Uber needs a special permit, but Uber believes it doesn't because its cars do still have a human behind the wheel, just not touching it. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Dave Player back with you here on 720 WGN. More with Doug Myers, Senior Vice President and Private Banking Regional Manager of Associated Bank, as Steve Grzanich sat down with him earlier this week.
I also see a lot of folks who do not do this, that are not involved in financial planning. What are the pitfalls of not doing this?
Well, that's an interesting question because you look at all the baby boomers and we see a lot of people who aren't prepared, and they might be in their late 40s or early 50s or even late 50s and haven't really sat down and thought about this. And, you know, with Social Security up in the air and people wonder what's going to happen in 10 years to Social Security. I recently read where 7 years is the drop-dead date for Social Security in terms of it not having enough money to fund all the people in retirement. I think this is a real issue, and what we try to focus on is do the right things and start preparing for your goal of eventually retiring and having the monies you need for what you need for, okay?
So 7 years, 7 years from the date people retire, or 7 years from today?
7 years from today, I read. Wow. That, you know, and you've been reading about this for years, about this Social Security fund going bankrupt, and it seems to always have enough money to pull from somewhere else to fund itself for the next couple of years. But, you know, nobody knows is the point. And if you count on Social Security for your retirement, you might not live in the manner you're accustomed to right now.
So for somebody like me who's just hit 50, am I going to be able to retire? Am I going to have a Social Security? Or you're scaring me, Doug.
We hope you can retire, or WGN might need a 90-year-old announcer. Right. So you just don't know.
Yeah, and a lot of folks are scared. I mean, sadly, are thinking that way. They think, well, I'm going to have to work until I die. And I don't know if that's something that we all want as a country, but I don't want that.
Well, I think, once again, you have to prepare when you're early and when you're younger to start facing these issues. And that's the whole concept of financial planning. And we counsel our clients that, you know, now is the time to start. You know, if you're in your 30s, that's great. If you're in your 50s, a little bit late. But let's start and have a goal and start working on that.
And what about your 20s? That's not too early.
That's even better. I mean, the graphs are amazing when you look at someone who starts, let's say, right out of college at 21, 25 versus when they start at 30 to 35. It's a world of difference in terms of the monies saved and the compounding effect of interest rates when you start early versus starting late.
What is the biggest reason why people don't start doing this? Like, for instance, if you had a 20-year-old guy who is working, has a nice job, why wouldn't he do this?
I think people in their 20s, and certainly, you know, I can look back to myself, you're invincible. 50 is a long way off. You don't really think about the adult things you need to think about when you're in your 20s. You're worried about, you know, the cars and the nice house and the clothes, and I think you get caught up in all the things you are looking to do when you're in your 20s, and it's hard to focus on the long-term future in that mindset, I think.
The idea, as you talked about Associated Bank working on this personal aspect to wealth management, making sure that there's a person involved in those decisions, involved in this process, that's a big deal. Why?
Well, I think you cannot erase the human expertise and the contact in your financial roadmap, so to speak. There's a lot of programs on the market. I know some of the discount brokers are offering the automatic financial planning and the automatic investing. And I think that's fine for some people, but I think when there's turmoil in the markets, as there always is, you're going to need a person to sit down with you and readjust and maybe reevaluate the plan and change direction a little bit. And I think we see some of those automatic vehicles not being able to do that.
And some of the experts, as they put together their list now for 2017, what they think is going to happen, say that the big things will be this customization, personalization, which you've touched on, but also this digital investment idea. Those seem to be contrary to each other, right? I mean, how do you have the computer or the digital investment app or whatever? How is that personal?
Well, it's not. And that might be a good resource for some people. We don't really buy into that just because, once again, you're not, look, we like to add value to our clients. And our expertise and advice is worth something. And our clients enjoy paying for that because hopefully it benefits them and they see the benefits of that.
$50 billion it was expected to grow in 2015, maybe $400 billion by 2018. This is this digital investment to asset area. This is an algorithm mainly? Does it run on an algorithm? And those are sort of limiting, aren't they?
They are. And it's based on historical data. And I don't think it's really based on, it's more of a lagging indicator in terms of the financial markets than the leading indicators. And I think, once again, it is probably an algorithm, and it's hard to predict how that industry will grow.
As we close out here, what advice would you give folks? What do people need to know? Are there any deadlines, anything that has to happen with wealth management, wealth planning before the end of the year?
Not really. I would say certainly by the end of the year, charitable contributions always comes to mind, and there's several ways to do charitable contributions, which from a tax-efficient standpoint, you might want to, if you have some charitable deductions that you want to take advantage of, you might want to use lower cost basis stocks or things like that. But I think overall, and looking at the new year, it's time to sit down and kind of plan out a financial plan for the year and maybe say, I need to contribute to that 401k or I need to max out on this. And I think it's always a time to reflect and, kind of put your financial house in order. And I think the new year is always a good time for that.
And is it something that if I called you at Associated Bank, you'd be able to help me do?
Absolutely.
What have you asked for Santa Claus for Christmas?
I'm pretty happy. I'm pretty satisfied. I am looking forward to the new year. I know there's been a lot of angst and anxiety over the political process, and I'm kind of glad and looking forward for things to calm down a little bit.
Yeah. Any New Year's resolutions?
Other than eating healthy and try to exercise more, that's what I'm coming in at.
Well, Doug, it's always good talking with you. All the best to you and your family for the holidays, and we'll see you after the new year.
Thank you, Steve. Same to you.
From ABC News, Tech Trends. Talking cars are nothing new.
Please do not refer to me as a car.
Knight Rider had one in the 80s, but vehicles talking to each other can keep them far enough apart to save 35,000 lives.
That's the number of people who died on our roadways last year. And it's not just a number. Every one of those is a mother or a father, a sister or a brother, a friend, a colleague.
Highway Safety Administrator Mark Rosekind says privacy experts worry those chatty cars may expose too much private data, but he says not so.
The system is designed to operate without using any personal information about specific vehicles or drivers. This is a safety tool, not a data gathering tool.
In the next 2 years, half the new cars will have vehicle-to-vehicle equipment that automatically slow or brake the speed to prevent deadly crashes, even warn that you're about to run a red light, and help stop other cars if you don't. With Tech Trends, I'm Andy Field, ABC News.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
It is Dave Plyer in for Steve Brzezanich on this early Thursday morning. Good morning to you. The road to success is paved with hard work and innovation. Headquartered in Nevada, Medical Cannabis Innovations Group, MCIG, Inc. is committed to being the leading distributor of technology, products, and services to fit the needs of a rapidly expanding industry. With 75 years of experience combined between the key players that make up the Grow Contractors Division, MCIG is proud to work with the cannabis industry leaders and provide broad and rounded solutions for legal growers nationwide. Mike Hawkins is their Chief Financial Officer, and he joins us this morning. Good morning to you, Mike.
Good morning, Dave. How are you doing today?
I am excellent. Happy holidays to you. The size of the market, Mike, for legal marijuana in the United States is projected to end up around $7 billion by the end of this year. Legal adult recreational marijuana sales topped $998 million in 2015 compared to $351 million in 2014, growing at about 184% year over year. And there's really no end in sight, is there, Mike?
There isn't. I guess the word is boom. You know, you hear the word growth boom and the medical and recreational marijuana industry is going to continue to see this kind of growth for quite some time.
Especially given what the green taxes are bringing into each state that legalizes it. Now, in a recent shareholder conference you held earlier this week, your company is on track to have your best quarter in history.
We are. We're seeing extremely a large growth in our particular construction division as well as the CBD markets. We've heard so long the stigmas associated with this particular industry, but the benefits that have been derived, the results and the testing that's out there is unchallenged in how this improves our lifestyle. And as more and more people begin to accept this, we're going to see it continually to grow.
List some of the key points. Share with us, like, what has led you to this success that you currently have.
Well, there's a couple of things that we've done that we think are a little different than everybody else. One, in this particular industry, there's numerous growth revenues, and that's kind of one of the pros of being a publicly traded company in this particular market is the revenue streams associated. You don't have to actually physically grow the marijuana or to sell it. The services provided are astronomical in what is needed. Now, you've got over 1,000 dispensaries in the state of California. You've got over, I think, 18,000 people working in the state of Colorado, and it's continuing to grow. The services needed to support these types of operations are astronomical. And for the companies who can venture into these different markets, and that's kind of been our motto over the last couple of years, we went into an acquisition mode and looked at some of these services and stuff we're providing to the communities or to support these ventures in these legalized states, that with these opportunities, we can manage to grow our revenue stream at a much faster pace.
Well, and you've gone public. So what does the process look like for a cannabis company who is trying to get to that point? What does the process look like to get that done?
Well, there's a pros and cons to going public, and we're one of the oldest publicly traded companies. We've been, and we're only 4 years old, so it's still an infant industry on the public side of the markets. To grow in or to become public in this, so you have to deal with the uncertainties that are out there. You know, there's the regulatory uncertainties, there's banking issues, and it's clearly a fragmented industry. You know, states run independently and separate. You have no overall federal guidance from being a publicly traded company. You know, the federal government, the SEC, has allowed these companies that provide services to this industry to exist and out there. So you have to be able to mine those, but it's mining those that actually makes it a very interesting play to the everyday man. You know, it's not filled with institutional funds. They're coming. It's not filled with the banking industries. They're coming. So now's a good opportunity for the everyday man to participate in something that's changing history. And the bottom line is, our forefathers, our great-grandparents, our grandparents, you know, legalized alcohol. And we look back in history and you wonder which side of the coin you stood on. And
sure.
It's the same thing that's going to happen here. 10 years from now, you're going to say, which side of history was I on? The legalization, the right side or the wrong side. And the legalization of it will happen. And when that happens, what we're noticing in our, even today with the stock on a public forum, is growth boom is astronomical. There's just no end in sight of the growth. And what we've seen, although still infant, in its infancy, a recession-proof industry. It just doesn't follow the norm. It just doesn't follow the normal pattern. There's medical reason for it. And what we've seen out there is that we don't follow that. And, of course, you go right back to the revenue streams. It's just a huge opportunity in ancillary services that are needed in this particular industry.
Now, fundraising, Mike, has traditionally been extremely difficult for cannabis companies, given the immense risk involved in the industry and the stigma attached to marijuana. How do you pull together a team of investors for something like that that truly understands the growth potential in the industry?
Well, the other thing that you can do is point the facts out and of course, then let the chips fall where they may. Here's what I do know, and this is what I kind of tell everybody. There's a lot of things that happen. There's a lot of clips that go on out there, and people that are against it have their little clips that they say, and people that are for it have their little clips that say. But here's what I do know. I know that 60% of the states approve cannabis, have approved cannabis laws. I know 65% of the U.S. adults agree with the legalization of cannabis. And over 80% of today's population live in states with approved cannabis laws. It's really hard to imagine congressmen and senators who were voted into office to protect and represent their state's interests, allowing folks, appointed government officials, for example, our future Attorney General, Mr. Sessions, to supersede their constituents' rights and their rights and their state's rights to govern. So, this is going to happen. Everything points towards this bill. And once you start pointing out the facts, and you see the studies out there, epilepsy is one of the most recent studies, where it has led to a 39% decline in seizures in epilepsy, and it's created nauseating, it's to reduce the nauseating in cancer treating patients. When you see these studies come out, you see what the American people want. Those are the facts, and you can very easily follow where those facts are going to lead. So when you end up talking with a potential investor and you lay the facts out there, then it ultimately comes a decision whether they want to participate or not participate. But getting them to understand why this is such a good play is not really that difficult to do once the facts are laid out.
How do you see the trend toward public cannabis companies changing as the new presidential administration begins? Will they be pro? Will they be anti? What are your feelings on this, and what are you seeing so far?
Well, as you know, it's a really mixed bag of themes here, and a lot of folks feel one way, a lot of folks feel another way. Our future Attorney General, Mr. Sessions, once said, I thought the KKK was okay until I found out they smoked pot, and he's clearly against it. But nonetheless, he's still just a person appointed by the president to serve in that capacity, and it's a capacity of authority. But he still can't override the laws that are out there in the state. What I do know is with the future, with our future president, there's two things that he's very interested in. Number one is jobs, and number two is funds to help us in our debt situation in the United States.
Right.
And this particular industry plays into both of those arenas and will be looked at favorably, I believe, by our future president.
Absolutely. Each state that has legalized medical or recreational marijuana tracks and reports information in different ways. Each state does that. So some only keep tabs on the number of registered patients, while others provide in-depth reports on tax revenues, number of licensed businesses, amount of cannabis sold. Several states, particularly those with little or no regulations, don't track anything. Do you see that reporting ever being regulated or changing more consistently nationwide?
Well, I clearly see that the reporting will ultimately change, and there will be national statistics and stuff like that, and there will be some consolidation of that. Just like in the public sector market industry, But you're going to see some consolidation, and you're going to see these institutional funds coming in and these and the banks coming in to support this particular industry as it continues to grow, and they realize that's where it's at. The same holds true. You've got the state laws that are going to govern, and I think once the federal government comes on board, and it's only a matter of time, whether it happens in this particular president's term of office or a future president's term of office, the handwriting is on the wall. It's inevitable that it's going to happen. And when that does, I think you'll see the statistics and stuff being combined to set the standards for the country as a whole.
Mike Hawkins, Chief Financial Officer for MCIG. Mike, thank you very much for joining us this morning. Happy holidays to you and your family.
Thank you, and happy holidays as well.
Thank you, Mike.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It is The Opening Bell on 720 WGN. Good morning to you once again. It's Dave Plyer in for Steve Grzanich this morning. From the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, Dow futures pointing down, as are the S&P and NASDAQ futures as well. In Europe, all the indices are down. The Shanghai Composites are up a point. The Nikkei and the FTSE are also down a point. And now for the latest on commodities and agriculture, here is Orion Samuelson.
Good morning. As we approach the Christmas holiday weekend, cattle producers got a little bit of a Christmas gift yesterday in the market. We hit prices we haven't seen for 4 months in live cattle futures, partly driven by short covering and cash price optimism for this week. The Wednesday morning Fed cattle exchange generally yielded $112 to $113.50 per hundredweight, and that was looked at favorably by traders. And so at the end of the session yesterday, December live cattle up $1.25 at $113.27. January feeder cattle up 40 cents at $130.22. And even live hog futures ended higher, with the February contract up 87 cents at $64.90 in yesterday's trade at the Merck. Let's look at the grain market at the Chicago Board of Trade. Not quite as good there, although soybeans did rise from one-month lows, but wheat hit another two-week low. Still keeping an eye on weather in South America, and so that will continue to impact the market. But at the end of the day, yesterday in wheat futures, down 3.5 cents, corn futures down 3.25, soybeans up 3 cents. Again, markets will close early on Friday, closing at 12 noon across the board. You have a good day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thank you, Orion. Now the Associated Bank Desk Market Outlook for Thursday, December 22nd, 2016. Here's what we'll be following. Today we'll be looking at the weekly jobless claims report, durable goods orders, the Chicago Fed National Activity Index, plus reports on consumer spending, core inflation, and personal income. As for earnings, reports are due today from Cintas Corporation, Conagra Brands, and Rite Aid Corporation. Today is National Regifting Day, an actual day for this. Each year, on the Thursday before Christmas, people across the United States participate in National Regifting Day. The day was chosen in honor of office parties and the unique Christmas gift exchange that they do. This particular December, Thursday appears to be the most common day for parties to hold their annual employee company party. As a method of recycling, approximately 14% of those surveyed believe that regifting is becoming more popular for that reason alone. Be careful not to re-gift something to the original giver, though. And if you're looking for last-minute luxury gifts to arrive just in time for the holidays, the Robb Report has provided the ultimate list of items still available. You can get a Laura Piana cashmere robe for only $13,000, an Asprey leather-bound magnetic Scrabble set. Ooh, you can get that for $11,950. And from Voltage Guitar, you can purchase Eric Clapton's 1939 Martin acoustic guitar for only $1 million. Or how about the trend of giving a loved one an experience of a lifetime? A one-day private quarterback camp with Joe Montana. It's a mere $65,000. If you're buying, I'd like that guitar. All right, Steve Cochran is coming back today through the end of the week. We'll turn things over to him and the morning crew just after this on 720 WGN.